You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 2nd July. We've got FedEx results off to the close. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alex Davis from Thimble Wealth. Friday is 100 days of load shedding, of no load shedding. I'm curious if there are any stocks or sectors he thinks benefits best from this. Rikus Reuters from PSG, buying all-time highs and not being scared of them. Ernest North from Naked on the economics of buying a car. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines. MoneyWeb process is still paying former CEO Van Dyk. Will pay him additionally for some share options he'll forego. Business Day. Robex upbeat about Western Australia growth and expansion. Group is selectively exploring expansion into new markets, particularly Western Australia. Morning markets. The US was green. S&P up a quarter of a percent, and NASDAQ two-thirds of a percent higher. Over in the east, it's mixed. We've got Sydney down a third of a percent, Tokyo up 0.4, Hong Kong up half a percent, and Tencent just over 1%. Commodities mostly green. Gold 2,339, Brent 86.81, platinum is red at 992, and palladium 982. Rand 18.39, Bitcoin 63,100. Top 40 opening call, red open, 180 points or a quarter of a percent down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Alex Davis from Thimble Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. I said in the intro there, Friday, 100 days of no load shedding. Turns out not just an election gimmick. The theory is we'll get some low-level load shedding, sort of stages two, perhaps, during winter. There are a lot of ifs in that statement. But are there any stocks or sectors that, with load shedding largely gone or at a much lower level, are going to benefit from a return to a sort of normal power supply?
Good morning, Simon. Certainly load shedding has pretty much affected every component of our economy.
Yeah. Right?
So everyone will be benefiting from low load shedding. With load shedding, obviously you have operational expenditure, there's CapEx, that's regarding to replacement as well as expansion. You've got to do maintenance on it. And then lastly, obviously there's lost sales or trading due to load shedding. So those are all different components of it. So I think personally it's affected most likely your consumer-related stocks the most, specifically your food retailers.
Mm-hmm.
We all saw the headlines last year where something like a ShopRite spent like 1 billion rand on diesel. Remember, their trading profits only about 12 billion, so that's already an 8% increase in profits for them. Pick and Pay, I think, also spent about 500 million or about 60 million a month when things were really bad. Considering they make almost no operating profit, that's enormous for them. So that gives you a sense of how it impacts them. The clothing retailers, also to an extent, even though they are mostly in shopping centers and most of them are got power supply, it does lead to lower training densities and so forth. And more of your rural malls perhaps don't have backup power. So certainly some of them have also been affected. And since I've mentioned the malls, certainly they have to spend a lot of money on specifically on the CapEx equation to make sure these malls can actually operate. And not all of these costs are always recoverable from the tenants. So I think they'll also be a big beneficiary. So we've got stocks like the Pull-Off, which is purely SA Inc. I think they'll certainly benefit. Also in Gauteng, for example. Then, you know, if you think about your tourism industry, certainly they will benefit because they've already got high fixed costs in that business. So you have to run these hotels, power full-time, even if its occupancy is 10-20%. So that will benefit them. They have to spend less on those type of costs. And then manufacturing, you know, think of all the Tiger brands and the Impacts and the Cups of this world that, you know, has to produce with limited energy. I think a good example also, if you look at some of the others, were like Bauer Metcalf and so forth, they explained how it impacted them, for example, on load shedding. And there was, yeah, so I think there are many, many examples. I think we all will benefit from much lower load shedding, not only from better trading, but also less spend on CapEx, less on operations. And I think just the overall confidence. People will go out more and spend more. Such as not.
Yeah, I take your point. I suppose it is just it's across almost everything. And I suppose ultimately, I mean, the Reserve Bank, and I forget the exact number, but load shedding was hurting our GDP. Maybe it gives us an extra 0.5% or 0.75% GDP. It's just good for everything.
Yes, certainly. So I think we're coming from a very, very low base, because last year things were horrific.
Yeah,
and I saw also Kusile make announcement yesterday that they're going to add some additional power to the grid. So we've seen some quite material new supply coming on. And I think also a lot of companies and consumers have also added to their own personal grid or electricity. So that's reduced some of the demand. So I think we're in a much better sustainable position. And it's going to be like a snowball effect. And every benefit we get in every month holds. You know, it's going to get bigger and bigger, and we're going to start seeing it in the results as well as economic activity as the year progresses.
Alex Dayson, Thumbo, both appreciate the early morning time.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Rikus Vredis, PSG hole-in-one Ramsig. Rikus, appreciate the time today. We were on BDTV last week and you were talking around all-time highs, and you made an interesting point that I really liked. You say that far too many folks are actually scared of all-time highs. When you see an all-time high, you start to actually look for reasons to buy the stock, which I think probably leaves many people scratching their head, because far too many people want to short it. And of course, that seldom works very well.
No, it doesn't. You know, we could talk for hours about this, but in essence, as far as I'm concerned, a market or a company's share price is underpinned by fundamentals, but it's driven by sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, market prices follow trends. And in the medium to short term, your price is not fixed where supply and demand comes together. You know, it's fixed by either your most enthusiastic buyer or your most enthusiastic seller, because the fundamentals don't change that much in the short to medium term. So what I'm looking for is an uptrend. And how do you define an uptrend? It's where your closing price is higher than your previous closing price, and the low of your price is also higher than your previous low, and that's an uptrend. So when a market makes a new high, it follows that principle. And really, in essence, one wants to be in an uptrend.
Yeah.
An uptrend lasts for a long time, you know. So that's why I don't like being contrarian, because contrarian only works, you know, about 20% of the time when that trend changes because something specific happens with a company, whether it be fraud or a new product or anything like that. But otherwise, things tend to trend, and a higher high is just indicative of that thing that you're in, that price that you're in, actually going higher.
And I like your point there on sentiment. I'm a simple look. I like to buy what's going up because I'm on the right side.
Yes.
But sentiment, I mean, no one walks into a Checkers or a BMW dealership and says, charge me a price that's never been charged before, because you always want the discount. But if someone in the market goes and says, you know what, I will go where no one's ever been before, and people follow, that is strong sentiment. I mean, that is bullishness. And that is, to your point, the continuation of that trend.
That's right. You know, so that enthusiasm is just being displayed on a graph. And as I said, there's a buyer that's more enthusiastic than you. It doesn't mean that one has to not be aware of prices going far beyond what any fundamental value indicates. But why go against the market if you know that your chances of being correct, you know, that I am the one that's going to pick this top or this bottom, you know, it follows Pareto. It's an 80-20 game. You're only going to be right 20% of the time, and then you're probably only lucky.
Yeah, and it comes back to that point. And I like the prices are going higher. And yes, we get some prices that are eye-watering. We were both old enough to have seen some of those bubbles at points. But it comes back to what we started with, which is when something's in that uptrend, look for reasons why there's an underpinning to support it. And, you know, you were talking Amazon last week, which had hit a new high. I think it's just gone through $2 trillion market cap. There's a lot to underpin to say, hey, there's a good stock here.
I would actually switch that around a little bit. You know, when something goes to the new, I go and take a look, not why I should buy it, because everybody's going to tell you to buy it because it's an uptrend. You know, it's sentiment again. I go and take a look and say, why shouldn't I be buying Amazon? Mm-hmm. And if I can't find a very good reason, then who am I to disagree with what thousands of traders and their machines are telling me is obviously something where it's sort of bullish, you know, in an uptrend. And when do you know you should start worrying about it? When a price doesn't make a new high and it starts making a new low, when your closing price is also lower than your previous closing lower price, then you know that trend is changing. And then you've got to go and take a look and say, you know, is it okay for me to still be in the stock or not?
And there's something here, there's a debate. And for all the years in the market, I've had folks who are fundamentalists and they look at the dot and the ratios and the balance sheet and the flip side, the chartists who, and they've never liked each other. And you're saying, no, but hang on a second, there's something in both of these. And, you know, using them together, probably going to make you a better investor and a better trader.
Of course, you know, it's stupid not to use all the tools available to you. And technical analysis, I mean, there's some strange things that one can talk about. But in essence, it's just a price, you know, displayed as a graph. It's just another way. And as of, you know, you can't argue against something that's going up. And this trend following that I've got, you know, it's an early warning signal as far as I'm concerned to go and take a look deeper into the fundamentals of a company.
And I like your point there, technical analysis. And I've been down these rabbit holes where you open your software and there are more indicators and oscillators and weird things than you've ever heard of. And I tried them and I made Christmas trees of my charts. And at the end of the day, I went back to, you know what, it's just price action. Keep it simple.
It's all it is. And as far as fundamentals are concerned, you know, it's the same basics there. You know, my main principle when I take a look fundamentally at a company, and this is, you know, I'm not talking about cyclical companies, that's a bit of a different game. But your normal, straightforward industrial type of company, is there a growth in dividends over the years? Because that's something you cannot hide from. You know, following that fundamental principle will probably make you wealthy. It won't make you rich. What makes you rich is something like NVIDIA, where there's a real change in a company's fortune and where you're either very good at fundamentally analyzing a company that probably nobody's ever heard of before, or you're just plain lucky.
Yeah.
But if you stick with basics, follow an uptrend, follow a company that increases its earnings and cash flow, you're bound to get wealthy, extraordinarily rich, which I said is more luck than anything else.
Yeah, and I like your point on dividend. Warren Buffett once said, the two things that you know are true in the set of results are the page numbers and the dividend amount, because you can't fudge those.
Fantastic.
We'll leave it there. Rikus Reeders, PSG, Hole-in-One, Remsich, appreciate the time.
That's our question today, LinkedIn and Twitter. All-time highs. I mean, I quite like them. And typically, if you buy a stock at all-time high, a year later, you almost certainly made better returns than you have if you bought it at a 52-week low. That's just the math. The question is, do you like all-time highs? Do you buy at all-time highs? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Canyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Ernest North, co-founder of Naked. Ernest, appreciate the time today. Buying a car, and it's a weird thing. I was thinking about it over the weekend, prepping for the interview. When we're buying a house, and I appreciate it costs a lot more, we give so much thought into it. It almost feels that when we're buying a car, we're almost lackadaisical about it, particularly around the costs and the money and the financing.
Absolutely, and it's nice to be on the show. Thanks for having me, Simon. The reality of South Africans is that our car is actually a very important part of our financial and social reality. I mean, practically, as South Africans, which car you choose is important on so many dimensions. I mean, depending on which city you're in, you need to buy a car that has sufficiently big wheels to get through the potholes. From a social perspective, I mean, people compare cars and look at cars so much. Unfortunately, our data shows that South Africans are overspending on cars a little bit. South Africans tend to rotate between cars quite often, and they tend to spend a little bit more on cars that are a little bit fancier than they should be driving, given their income levels. So it's something that obviously as Naked, we pay quite close attention to in understanding what cars people are driving and how they are paying for those cars, because it's taking out a big chunk of people's salary.
And you make a point. We look at the car repayment, and that's one of the payments. But then, of course, I need to phone you guys and get insurance, or rather go on the app. I need to maintain that car. There's all those auxiliary costs around it as well.
And the reality is that, I mean, the majority of people finance cars. And so understanding the effect that interest has on financing your car and your financial position over that four-year period, understanding how that interplays with the reality of depreciation. It is an asset in quotation marks, but it's going to be worth way less in 3 or 5 years. And during that time, you're going to have to spend a lot of money on maintenance. Mm-hmm. Like things break, depending on whether you're buying a new car or a used car. If the cam belt or something big breaks, it's a lot of money. Increasingly, the quality of the roads means that people really are paying a lot more on rotating their wheels or their tires. So maintaining a car is not cheap. And so I think the mission that we're on is really to tell people or to help people understand the financial reality of owning a car, which, yes, you can enjoy that new car smell.
Sure.
But you need to be realistic on what this journey of 5 years of financing involves.
I also once on Amazon a long time ago, you could buy the new car smell in a tin and spray it in your car. But you read some numbers in the post. You had a 300,000 Rand car, 10% deposit, 5 years at 13% interest rate. None of that seems onerous, but you pay 100,000 Rand in interest. You just paid 400K for the car instead of 300.
Exactly. And I think we often look at the difference between where people are buying a car with the intention of driving that car indefinitely. Let's say if you're going to be driving a car for 10, 12, 15 years. I won't name too many brands, but there are brands where people buy the car with that intention. Mm-hmm. Then I think thinking about its future value is not that critical. But if you're going into a finance deal where either you feel the car doesn't suit your needs beyond the 4 or 5 years, so you need to resell it at the end of the 4 or 5 years and then buy something else, or even worse, you have a balloon payment at the end, then understanding what that car will be worth at the end of the 4 or 5 years is really important. And so I think understanding the average rate at which the particular brand which you're considering and that particular make, the rate at which it typically loses value, and then projecting that for 4 or 5 years is a very important exercise, because it tells you at that point, I will have an asset that's worth X, but I will still owe Y. But then I will need however many rands to put down the deposit for buying another car. It really is an important exercise to put yourself into that projection of 4 or 5 years down the line and to assume you're going to have to do that replacement. How will you pay for it?
And you mentioned balloon payment there, and that's where I've bought the 300,000 Rand car, but I'm only paying off, I don't know, 200,000 or 250,000 of it. I'm paying interest on the full 300, but at the end of the duration, I still owe money. My sister did one of these, and we're going back 20 years, and she was completely surprised. And the amount that she owed on that balloon payment was, like, I think if I recall correctly, it was a couple of thousand more than she could actually get for the car.
So I think the important distinction to make there is this happens in two scenarios. The one is where you go for traditional financing, but as part of reducing your monthly payment, in addition to putting down a deposit, the finance house gives you an option of committing to a future balloon payment. So that's saying, for example, 30% or 40% of the car's value today, you will owe at the end of the five-year period. And so understanding what that number is important. But the other scenario in which this happens is where often with a new car deal, some brands put together a standard deal that they advertise and they say this car is being sold in this manner. And so everybody buying that particular car from that dealership will get this deal where you're effectively committing to only driving the car for 4 or 5 years and then handing it back. But you are at risk of the level of depreciation being more than you had anticipated. And more importantly, you don't have anything at the end of it. And so the next car that you're going to be driving 4 or 5 years from now, you don't have a starting deposit. So if you're going to go that route, make sure that you budget separately for building up a deposit for when you're in that 4 or 5 year scenario.
Yeah, I know the T's and C's, because sometimes, take the point, a high mileage or perhaps the car isn't in as good a condition, suddenly they don't want to take it back because it's not what they were hoping for.
Exactly. So they typically say, they call it guaranteed future value.
Yeah.
But that guarantee is subject to you, for example, not driving more than 15,000 kilometers per year. So the moment you exceed that, that guarantee is off the table and you're exposed to the risk that that thing actually depreciated significantly more.
We'll leave it there. Ernest North, co-founder Naked. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with Chantal Marks and Keith McLachlan as we had a coalition cabinet, asking them about preferred SA Inc. stocks. We asked you if you were bullish SA Inc. Almost half said yes, absolutely. A third said yes, selectively. The rest of you said nap, you're still preferring offshore. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast, just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Traders switching from FX to indices.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.